From broken to unbreakable, unleash your inner warrior. Introduction. Welcome, warrior in waiting, to a journey that will not merely change your mind, it will reforge your soul. This is not a story of survival. This is a manifesto for revolution. A revolution that begins in the shattered corners of your past and culminates in the unshakable strength of your future. What if I told you that every heartbreak, every failure, every moment you've labeled broken was secretly a blueprint for your greatness? That the science of your brain, the stories of history's greatest fighters, and the raw, untapped power of your spirit are conspiring to turn your pain into your armor. This audiobook is your weapon. Let's begin. We live in a world obsessed with perfection. Curated social media feeds, airbrushed ideals of success, and whispered lies that strong people don't struggle. But what if true strength isn't the absence of cracks, but the light that pours through them? From broken to unbreakable is not about fixing you, because you are not broken. You are a mosaic of battles fought, losses endured, grounded in neuroscience, psychology, and the raw testimonies of those who've turned agony into action. This book dismantles the myth that trauma, failure, or vulnerability are endpoints. They are ignition switches. Modern science has uncovered a truth ancient warriors knew instinctively. The body remembers, but the brain can rewrite. Neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to reorganize itself, is your secret weapon. Every time you label yourself damaged, you reinforce neural pathways of defeat. But every time you ask, "What did this pain teach me?" you forge new roads toward resilience. Studies from Stanford University reveal that individuals who reframe adversity as a challenge response rather than a threat show heightened activity in the prefrontal cortex, the brain's command center for courage. Meanwhile, Harvard psychologists have documented how post-traumatic growth, not just post-traumatic stress, can emerge when we stop running from our stories and start interrogating them. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Becoming unbreakable demands you first surrender. Surrender the need to control every outcome. Surrender the shame that whispers, "You should be over this by now." Surrender the lie that strength means never asking for help. Ancient samurai mastered the art of mushin, a state of no mind, where fear and overthinking dissolve into instinctive action. Modern neuroscience echoes this. When we stop resisting emotions and instead inhabit them, the amygdala, the brain's fear hub, calms and clarity emerges. This is the warrior's paradox. To gain power, you must first relinquish it. To heal, you must stop fighting yourself. Through immersive exercises, you'll learn to mine your pain for purpose. What unique wisdom did your darkest moments teach you? Rewire your mental narratives. How to replace "I can't survive this" with "I will alchemize this." Build a resilience reservoir using daily microactions that compound into unshakable confidence. This book is not a quick fix. It is a call to arms, a demand to stop outsourcing your healing to gurus, apps, or fleeting motivation. The warrior's path is gritty, non-linear, and deeply personal. You will be asked to confront the parts of yourself you've locked away, the anger, the shame, the dreams you abandoned. But you'll also discover tools to silence your inner critic using military-grade mental frameworks, forge emotional armor through boundary setting and radical self-honesty. Turn triggers into teachers by decoding the hidden messages in your pain. Imagine standing at the edge of your future, no longer haunted by the ghosts of "what if," but empowered by the mantra of "what next." Imagine your story becoming a torch for others, lost in their own darkness. This is the ultimate goal of From Broken to Unbreakable, to transform your journey into a legacy. The warrior's path begins with a single choice. Will you keep treating your past as a life sentence, or will you weaponize it into a lifeline? The science is clear. The stories are proof. The tools are in your hands. Press play. From victim to warrior. From fractured to unbreakable. Your future self is already cheering you on. Chapter 1. Embracing Your Brokenness. There is a quiet rebellion stirring in the acknowledgement of our brokenness, a revolution that begins not with triumph, but with surrender. To embrace your brokenness is to stare into the fractured mirror of your past and see not a reflection of failure, but a map of hidden strength. This chapter is not about fixing what is shattered. It is about understanding that the cracks themselves are where the light of transformation enters. Every human life is built upon a foundation shaped by trauma, loss, and vulnerability. Yet society often teaches us to bury these experiences like shameful secrets. We plaster over our pain with smiles, achievements, and distractions, believing that to admit weakness is to invite judgment. But what if the opposite is true? What if the stories we are most afraid to tell hold the key to unlocking our greatest potential? The journey begins with a simple yet radical act, acknowledging that your pain exists and that it matters. Trauma, whether from childhood wounds, catastrophic failures, or the slow erosion of self-doubt, leaves imprints on the psyche as real as scars on skin. To ignore these imprints is to risk allowing them to fester, silently shaping your decisions, relationships, and self-worth. Consider the metaphor of a cracked ceramic bowl. A traditional Japanese practice called kintsugi repairs broken pottery by filling the fractures with gold lacquer, not to hide the damage, but to highlight it as part of the object's history. The bowl becomes more beautiful, more valuable, because it has been broken. In the same way, your pain is not a flaw to erase, but a testament to your endurance, a raw material waiting to be gilded with meaning. History's most luminous figures understood this truth. Take Ludwig van Beethoven, who composed his greatest symphonies while grappling with the despair of deafness. Imagine the agony of a musician losing his hearing, the cruel irony of silence enveloping the man whose life was dedicated to sound. Yet Beethoven did not succumb to bitterness. Instead, he wrote, "I will seize fate by the throat. It shall not bend me completely." His Ninth Symphony, composed when he was almost entirely deaf, redefined classical music and gave the world the transcendent ode to joy. His brokenness became his muse. Similarly, Maya Angelou, silenced by childhood trauma for nearly 5 years, emerged from that void with a voice that would galvanize generations. Her memoir, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, did not shy from the horrors of racism and sexual assault, but used them as a forge to shape a legacy of resilience and literary brilliance. These stories are not exceptions. They are blueprints. They remind us that brilliance often emerges not in spite of brokenness, but because of it. Yet the modern world often equates suffering with weakness, urging us to move on or stay positive in the face of pain. This cultural script is not just unhelpful. It is dangerous. Suppressing emotional wounds creates what psychologists call a shadow self, a reservoir of unprocessed grief and anger that leaks into every aspect of life. Studies show that unresolved trauma correlates with chronic illnesses, addiction, and self-sabotage. The body keeps score, as Bessel van der Kolk famously wrote, and when we refuse to listen to its whispers, it will eventually scream. Consider the case of a high-performing executive who, after years of numbing childhood abandonment with 80-hour work weeks, collapses from burnout. Or the parent who swallows their grief over a miscarriage, only to find themselves inexplicably rageful toward their living children. These are not moral failures. They are the consequences of a society that prioritizes productivity over healing. The first step to dismantling this cycle is to confront your fractures with compassionate curiosity. Begin by asking yourself, what fractures in my life have shaped who I am? This is not an exercise in self-pity, but an archaeological dig into the layers of your identity. Grab a journal and let your pen move without censorship. Describe the moments that left you feeling shattered, the betrayal that made trust feel impossible, the failure that still haunts your dreams, the loss that carved a hollow space in your chest. Write as if no one will ever read it, because this is for you alone. As you do, notice the patterns. How did that childhood criticism from a parent morph into your inner critic? How did that professional rejection steer you away from your true calling? The act of naming these experiences strips them of their power to control you from the shadows. But acknowledgement alone is not enough. You must also reframe your relationship with pain. Pain is not the enemy. It is a teacher, albeit a harsh one. Imagine your pain as a lighthouse in a storm. Its beam may be blinding, but it is guiding you away from the rocks. When an athlete tears a muscle, the searing agony forces them to rest and rebuild stronger tissue. Emotional pain functions similarly. The grief of a divorce can teach you about the love you deserve. The humiliation of a public failure can reveal your capacity for humility and reinvention. Even physical pain, as research on post-traumatic growth illustrates, can deepen empathy and gratitude. The key is to stop asking, "Why is this happening to me?" and start asking, "What is this trying to show me?" This shift in perspective requires practice, for the mind is wired to resist discomfort. Neuroscience reveals that the brain's amygdala interprets emotional pain as a threat, triggering fight-or-flight responses. But neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to rewire itself, means we can train this circuitry. When you feel the ache of an old wound resurface, pause, breathe. Instead of reaching for distraction or denial, lean into the sensation. Ask, where is this pain living in my body? What color or texture would it have? What is it trying to communicate? By personifying your pain, you transform it from a nebulous enemy into a messenger. A client once described her chronic anxiety as a scared child clutching her leg. Through dialogue in her journal, she discovered that the child was actually a protector, trying to shield her from repeating past abandonment. This realization allowed her to thank her anxiety for its intention while gently asserting, "I am safe now." To fully embrace brokenness is to recognize that you are not alone in your suffering. Across cultures and centuries, humans have turned their scars into sacred stories. The Maori people of New Zealand practice tamoko, traditional facial tattoos that chronicle ancestral lineage and personal trials. Each spiral and curve represents a challenge overcome, a loss mourned, a lesson earned. In West Africa, the Adinkra symbol Bese Saka, a cluster of kola nuts, signifies resilience and abundance arising from collective struggle. Even nature teaches this lesson. Forests ravaged by fire eventually sprout new seedlings nourished by the ashes, your pain connects you to this universal tapestry of survival. It is not a sign that you are broken beyond repair, but proof that you are alive, learning, and capable of rebirth. The danger lies in romanticizing suffering, in assuming that all pain must be alchemized into glory. Some wounds cut too deep, and there is no shame in seeking help to carry them. Therapists, support groups, and spiritual guides can be fellow travelers on this path. But the critical step is to stop waiting for your brokenness to disappear before you deem yourself worthy of joy. You can grieve and grow simultaneously. You can honor your scars while still dreaming of the future. This is the paradox of the unbreakable spirit. It is not a state of perfection, but a commitment to keep walking, even when every step feels like a battle. As you close this chapter, carry with you the words of Leonard Cohen. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Your fractures are not accidents. They are portals. Begin today by lighting a candle for the parts of yourself you've deemed unworthy. Write them a letter of gratitude. Say to your pain, "You have shaped me. You have tried to protect me. Now I will learn from you." This is not the end of your story. It is the prologue to a life where every scar becomes a compass, guiding you toward the warrior you were born to become. Chapter 2: The Warrior's Mindset. The transition from survivor to warrior begins not with a change in circumstances, but with a seismic shift in the architecture of the mind. It is a rebellion against the stories we've inherited, a refusal to let pain write the final chapter of our lives. Imagine standing at the edge of a storm you did not choose, the kind that leaves cracks in your spirit and questions burning into your throat. For years, you've asked, "Why me?" as if the universe owed you an answer, as if suffering were a riddle to solve rather than a fire to walk through. But somewhere in the chaos, a new question emerges, quieter, but far more potent. What now? This is the moment the survivor becomes the warrior. The difference between these two states is not luck, talent, or destiny. It is the deliberate rewiring of the mental scripts that govern how you perceive struggle, how you engage with fear, and ultimately how you define your own strength. To understand the warrior's mindset, we must first dissect the anatomy of victimhood. Victimhood is not a moral failing, it is a neurological habit. When we fixate on "why me?", we activate the brain's default mode network, DMN, a region associated with rumination, self-referential thought, and passive reflection. Studies from the University of California reveal that excessive DMN activity correlates with heightened anxiety and depression, trapping individuals in a loop of helplessness. The victim mindset thrives on externalizing blame on circumstances, genetics, or the actions of others, because it offers a temporary shield from the terrifying responsibility of agency. But this shield is also a cage. By contrast, the warrior's question, "What now?", ignites the prefrontal cortex, the brain's command center for planning, decision-making, and goal-directed behavior. It is a cognitive pivot from helplessness to ownership, from "this happened to me" to "this is happening, and I will decide what it means." Cultivating courage, the warrior's first weapon, requires confronting a paradox. Bravery is not the absence of fear, but the mastery of it. Neuroscience shows that courage is a skill forged in the crucible of discomfort. When you intentionally lean into challenges, whether it's speaking up in a meeting, setting a boundary, or restarting a derailed career, you stimulate the release of dopamine, a neurotransmitter linked to motivation and reward. Over time, this creates a neural feedback loop where challenge itself becomes addictive. Discipline, the warrior's backbone, is often misunderstood as rigid self-punishment. True discipline is the art of aligning daily actions with deepest values, even when motivation evaporates. It is the choice to write one page of your novel after a 12-hour shift, to meal prep despite exhaustion, to meditate when chaos reigns. Adaptability, the warrior's secret edge, demands fluency in the language of failure. Research from Stanford's Resilience Project highlights that individuals who view setbacks as data, not destiny, recover 40% faster from adversity. Adaptability is not about avoiding storms, but learning to dance in the rain, recalibrating strategies without surrendering the mission. The neuroscience of resilience offers a roadmap for this transformation. At the heart of grit lies neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to rewire itself in response to experience. Every time you choose a warrior's thought, "I can learn from this," over a victim's narrative, "I can't handle this," you strengthen synaptic pathways associated with resilience. Dr. Carol Dweck's seminal work on growth mindsets reveals that individuals who believe their abilities can be developed through effort, strategy, and mentorship outperform those with fixed mindsets, even when initial skill levels are identical. Furthermore, practices like mindfulness meditation have been shown to thicken the prefrontal cortex and shrink the amygdala, the brain's fear center, literally altering your biology to favor calm decisiveness over panic. A daily affirmation ritual, "I am a warrior, not a victim," may seem simplistic, but its power lies in repetition's ability to sculpt identity. Language is not merely descriptive, it is generative. When you declare, "I am a warrior," you activate the brain's self-referential processing regions, gradually internalizing the identity you aspire to embody. Over time, this shifts your subconscious beliefs, which in turn dictate 95% of behavior, according to cognitive researchers. To deepen this practice, pair affirmations with embodied action. Strike a power pose, shown by Harvard's Amy Cuddy, to boost testosterone and reduce cortisol. Visualize past victories or recite your mantra during physical exertion. The body and mind are not separate entities. They are co-conspirators in your transformation. The application of military training principles to civilian life offers a masterclass in engineering the warrior's mindset. Consider the U.S. Navy SEALs 40% rule. When your mind insists you're exhausted, you've typically only used 40% of your true capacity. SEALs endure Hell Week not through superhuman strength, but through systematic mental frameworks. They break colossal challenges into micro-missions. Just make it to the next meal. Reframe pain as purpose. "This suffering is making me stronger," and cultivate stress inoculation through progressive exposure to discomfort. Civilians can adapt these tactics, tackling a career transition as a series of quarterly objectives, viewing rejection as feedback loops, or using cold showers to practice embracing discomfort. Military units also prioritize after-action reviews, ritualized reflections on what worked, what failed, and how to improve. Applying this to daily life, e.g., a nightly 5-minute audit of wins and lessons, accelerates growth by transforming random experiences into deliberate practice. The warrior's mindset, however, is not a solitary pursuit. It thrives in the soil of community. Ancient Sparta's warriors trained in phalanxes because they knew individual strength is amplified by collective accountability. Modern psychology echoes this. Studies show that individuals with accountability partners are 65% more likely to achieve goals. Surround yourself with those who speak the language of what now. Mentors who've navigated their own infernos, peers who challenge your excuses, and protégés who remind you of how far you've come. Yet, be ruthless in distancing from emotional vampires who weaponize victimhood. As author Jim Rohn famously said, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Curate your inner circle like your life depends on it, because neurologically it does. Mirror neurons will unconsciously adopt the mindset of those around you. To sustain the warrior's mindset, you must also master the art of strategic recovery. Even the most elite soldiers prioritize sleep, nutrition, and downtime because they understand that resilience is a renewable resource, not an infinite one. The concept of tactical breathing, used by special forces to maintain calm under fire, can be adapted as a 4-7-8 technique. Inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 7, exhale for 8, to reset the nervous system during stress spikes. Similarly, the military's emphasis on situational awareness translates to mindfulness in civilian contexts, regularly scanning your mental, emotional, and physical state to preempt burnout. Recovery is not indulgence, it is the reloading of your psychological armor. Ultimately, the warrior's mindset is a choice renewed moment by moment. It is the decision to meet a setback with curiosity instead of collapse, to greet fear as a compass pointing toward growth, and to treat life not as something that happens to you, but as a forge where you are both the blacksmith and the blade. There will be days when the victims whisper, "This is too hard," drowns out the warrior's roar. On those days, remember that resilience is not about never falling, but about how you rise, how you recalibrate, how you refuse to let yesterday's wounds dictate tomorrow's possibilities. The science is clear. Your brain is wired to adapt, but it waits for your command. So, command it. Rewrite the script. Choose what now over why me, again and again until it becomes your marrow. Until the warrior isn't just who you are, but who you've always been. Chapter 3. Forging Your Armor. The path from brokenness to unbreakability demands more than sheer willpower. It requires armor. Not the clanging metal of medieval knights, but something far more profound. A layered defense system forged from the raw materials of your daily choices. Armor, in this sense, is not a cage to trap you, but a sanctuary to free you. It is the intentional cultivation of practices that protect your energy, fortify your body, and anchor your spirit. To build it, you must confront a sobering truth. The world will not pause to accommodate your healing. Distractions will clamor for your attention. Toxic relationships will test your resolve. And your own mind will sometimes feel like a battlefield. This chapter is your blueprint for crafting 3 interconnected shields, emotional, physical, and spiritual, that will allow you to navigate these storms not as a victim, but as a warrior who bends but never breaks. Let us begin with the most invisible yet impactful layer, emotional armor. Imagine your energy as a finite resource, a currency more valuable than gold. Every interaction, obligation, or unresolved resentment is a withdrawal from this account. Without boundaries, you risk bankruptcy. Building emotional armor starts with the radical act of saying no to what drains you, so you can say yes to what rebuilds you. This is not selfishness. It is stewardship. A surgeon would never operate with a dirty scalpel. Yet we routinely allow emotional contamination, people who dismiss your dreams, tasks that misalign with your purpose, or habits that shrink your self-worth, to infect our inner world. The first tool in your arsenal is the boundary, not as a wall to isolate, but as a filter to purify. Start small. Identify one relationship or commitment that leaves you feeling depleted, and experiment with incremental distance. Notice the guilt that arises, the fear of disappointing others, and then lean into the discomfort anyway. Boundaries are muscles. They strengthen with repetition. Over time, you'll discover that protecting your energy isn't about rejecting others. It's about honoring the sacredness of your own potential. While emotional armor shields your mind, physical armor fuels its power. The ancient Spartans knew this well. Their legendary endurance was forged not just through combat drills, but through deliberate attention to diet, rest, and communal rituals. Modern science now echoes this wisdom. Studies from the University of Cambridge reveal that physical resilience, built through consistent exercise, nutrient-dense foods, and quality sleep, directly enhances neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to adapt to stress. Your body is not a separate entity from your struggles. It is the battlefield where they are won or lost. Consider exercise not as a punishment for imperfection, but as a dialogue with your future self. When you lift weights, you're not merely building muscle. You're rehearsing perseverance. When you choose a nourishing meal over numbing junk food, you're not dieting. You're voting for a version of yourself who deserves vitality. Even rest becomes revolutionary in a culture that glorifies burnout. Prioritizing 7 hours of sleep is an act of defiance against the lie that productivity defines your worth. These choices compound. A 20-minute walk today becomes the stamina to face a crisis tomorrow. A week of hydration and greens sharpens your focus for life's mental marathons. The body is not a machine to exploit, but an ally to cultivate, one deliberate choice at a time. Yet armor forged solely from emotional grit and physical discipline remains incomplete without its third, most transcendent layer, spiritual armor. This is not about dogma or doctrine, but about connecting to something larger than your individual struggle. For some, it's the stillness of meditation, where the chaos of the mind settles like silt in a pond. For others, it's the rhythm of prayer, the awe of nature, or the creative flow of art. Spiritual armor answers the question every warrior eventually asks: what am I fighting for? Without this anchor, resilience devolves into hollow endurance. A study published in the Journal of Positive Psychology found that individuals with a strong sense of purpose, whether rooted in faith, family, or service, recover 50% faster from adversity than those without it. Your spiritual practice is your compass in the fog of battle. It reminds you that your pain is not pointless, your efforts not in vain. Begin by identifying what makes you feel connected to the infinite, the activity that dissolves time, the place where your soul exhales. It might be sitting under an oak tree at dawn, journaling by candlelight, or losing yourself in music. Whatever it is, ritualize it. 10 minutes daily. No shortcuts. Over time, this practice becomes your sanctuary, a portable refuge you can access amid life's chaos. The synergy of these three armors, emotional, physical, spiritual, creates what psychologists call the resilience trifecta. Imagine a triangle where each side reinforces the others. Set a boundary, emotional armor, and you conserve energy for a workout, physical armor. Complete that workout, and you enter meditation, spiritual armor, with a clearer mind. This virtuous cycle transforms isolated actions into an unbreakable system. To operationalize this, we turn to the chapter's first action step, creating a personalized armor checklist. This is not another overwhelming to-do list, but a curated set of non-negotiables tailored to your unique battles. Start with one item from each armor category. For emotional armor, it might be, I will pause for 3 breaths before responding to criticism. For physical armor, I will take a 10-minute walk after meals. For spiritual armor, I will light a candle each morning and name one thing I'm fighting for. Write these down and place them where you'll see them daily. Your bathroom mirror, phone lock screen, or workstation. The checklist is a contract with your future self, a promise that no matter how chaotic the day becomes, you will defend your sovereignty. The second action step, the 30-day challenge, is where theory meets trenches. Commit to one small act of self-care daily, but with a twist. Frame it as armor building, not indulgence. Instead of, I'll take a bath to relax, think, I'm fortifying my emotional resilience by immersing in restorative silence. Each action, no matter how minor, is a brick in your fortress. Document these acts in a journal, not just as tasks, but as evidence of your evolution. Day 1. Drank herbal tea instead of scrolling social media before bed, protected my mental space. Day 14. Said no to covering a co-worker's shift to attend my daughter's recital. Honored my priorities. Day 30. Woke up early to watch the sunrise alone, reconnected to my purpose. The goal is not perfection, but pattern recognition. By day 30, you'll see a mosaic of choices that prove your armor is not a fantasy. It's a practice, built daily. Critics may argue that this approach is too simplistic, that deep wounds require more than checklists and walks. They're half right. Armor doesn't erase pain. It gives you the stability to face it without it crumbling. Think of a climber scaling a cliff. The harness doesn't eliminate the risk of falling, but it allows them to ascend with confidence. Your armor works the same way. It won't make you invincible, but it will make you unconquerable. There will still be days when boundaries falter, workouts are skipped, or meditation feels futile. The warrior's skill lies not in avoiding these lapses, but in treating them as data, not destiny. Each slip is feedback. Adjust the checklist, refine the ritual, try again. Ultimately, forging armor is an act of rebellion against a society that profits from your insecurity, against the voice that whispers you're not worth protecting. Every time you choose rest over hustle, presence over distraction, or self-respect over approval-seeking, you declare war on the forces that seek to keep you fragmented. This chapter is your forge. The tools are here. The fire is lit. Now hammer your boundaries into shields, your sweat into sword, your silence into sanctuary. The battle for your unbreakable self begins not on some distant field, but here, now, in the choices only you can make. Chapter 4. The Battlefield Within. Conquering self-doubt, fear, and limiting beliefs. The human mind is both a sanctuary and a war zone, a place where the most profound victories and the most devastating defeats are fought in silence. This chapter is not about external adversaries or societal pressures. It is about the invisible enemies that reside within us, the whispers of self-doubt, the paralyzing grip of fear, and the prison bars of limiting beliefs. These are the saboteurs that hijack our potential, often disguised as rationality or humility, convincing us that playing small is safer than daring greatly. To conquer this internal battlefield, we must first shine a light on the shadows we've been taught to ignore. Imagine standing at the edge of a cliff, your dreams stretching out like a vast horizon before you, only to hear a voice inside your head hiss, "You're not ready." That voice, sharp and familiar, is what psychologists call the inner saboteur. It wears many masks: the perfectionist who demands flawlessness to avoid criticism, the imposter who insists you're a fraud waiting to be exposed, the catastrophizer who spins worst-case scenarios like a filmmaker addicted to tragedy. These are not mere quirks of personality. They are survival mechanisms gone rogue, remnants of ancient instincts that once protected us from literal danger, but now suffocate us in metaphorical cages. Perfectionism, for instance, is not a pursuit of excellence. It is a fear of rejection, dressed in ambition's clothing. Imposter syndrome is not humility. It is a denial of your own worth, a refusal to believe you deserve the space you occupy. The first step in this battle is to unmask these saboteurs, to interrogate their origins with the precision of a detective. When did you first feel the need to be perfect? Was it a childhood spent appeasing a critical parent, a teacher who praised results over effort, a culture that equated mistakes with moral failure? How did the imposter take root? Was it the time you were laughed at for speaking up, the promotion you earned but attributed to luck, the societal narrative that told you people like you don't belong in certain rooms? These questions are not exercises in self-pity. They are acts of rebellion. By tracing the lineage of your saboteurs, you strip them of their power, transforming them from omnipotent monsters into understandable and manageable artifacts of your history. Once identified, the next challenge is to silence the cacophony of negative self-talk, that relentless inner critic that narrates your life like a biased commentator. The problem is not that this voice exists. The problem is that we mistake it for truth. Neuroscience reveals that the brain's default mode network, the region active during self-reflection, often amplifies self-criticism as a misguided attempt to keep us safe from failure or judgment. But safety is an illusion, and the cost of this internal censorship is a life half-lived. To dismantle this, we must adopt the mindset of a scientist observing data, not a prisoner reacting to threats. When the critic snarls, you'll embarrass yourself, pause and ask, "Is this a fact or a fear? What evidence supports this claim? What evidence contradicts it?" This simple act of metacognition, thinking about thinking, creates psychological distance, allowing you to respond rather than react. Language itself becomes a weapon here. Negative self-talk thrives on absolutes. "I always mess up. I'll never succeed. Everyone is judging me." These statements are not only false, but neurologically toxic. They reinforce neural pathways of helplessness. The antidote is to disrupt these patterns with specificity and compassion. Replace "I'm a failure" with "I'm learning." Swap "this is impossible" with "this is unfamiliar." Cognitive behavioral therapists call this cognitive restructuring, but you can think of it as editing the script of your inner narrative, line by line. Over time, these edits accumulate, rewiring your brain to default to curiosity instead of condemnation. Yet even as we wage war on self-doubt, we must make peace with a paradoxical ally: failure. Society treats failure as a scarlet letter, a sign of incompetence or poor character. But the battlefield within demands a radical reframe. Failure is not the opposite of success. It is its prerequisite. Every master was once a disaster. Every innovator has a graveyard of ideas that didn't work. The difference between those who succumb to failure and those who transcend it lies not in avoiding falls, but in refining the art of rising. Consider the Japanese practice of kintsugi, the art of repairing broken pottery with gold-dusted lacquer. The breaks are not hidden. They are highlighted, transformed into features of beauty and resilience. Your failures are your kintsugi, evidence of your courage to try, to risk, to grow. To operationalize this mindset, we begin with the fear inventory, a deliberate excavation of the anxieties holding you hostage. This is not a passive list, but an active interrogation. Take a blank page and divide it into two columns. In the first, name each fear with the brutal honesty. I'm afraid I'll be rejected if I speak my truth. I'm terrified that pursuing my passion will lead to financial ruin. I fear I'm not smart enough to compete. In the second column, reframe each fear as a question of growth. If I face rejection, what might I learn about my own resilience? If financial challenges arise, how could they force me to innovate? If I feel intellectually outmatched, what skills could I develop to close the gap? This exercise does not dismiss fear. It harnesses its energy. Fear is a compass pointing to the edges of your comfort zone, the very places where transformation awaits. The final tactic is perhaps the most unnerving, role-playing a dialogue with your inner critic. Sit in a quiet space, place two chairs facing each other, and physically move between them. In one chair, speak as the critic, voicing every harsh judgment, every doubt. Then switch seats and respond as your wisest self, the version of you that's rooted in compassion and clarity. This might feel theatrical, even silly at first, but its power lies in externalizing the internal. By giving the critic a voice outside your head, you diminish its authority. You begin to see it not as you, but as a conditioned program running in the background, one you can choose to mute or reprogram. Throughout this process, remember that the battlefield within is not a place to win, but to learn. Self-doubt will resurface. Fear will linger. Old beliefs will claw at the walls of your progress. This is not a sign of weakness. It is proof of your humanity. The goal is not eradication, but mastery, the ability to acknowledge these forces without letting them steer your ship. Every time you question a limiting belief, every time you greet failure with curiosity, every time you speak back to the critic, you are not just fighting a battle. You are reclaiming territory in the most important war of all, the one for your own potential. The journey inward is messy, non-linear, and often uncomfortable. There will be days when the critic's voice drowns out your resolve, when fear feels like a lead blanket, when failure knocks the wind from your lungs. On those days, remember this. The greatest warriors are not those who never falter, but those who keep showing up to the fight, armed with the hard-earned wisdom that every scar is a testament to their strength. Your mind is not an enemy to be vanquished. It is a landscape to be understood, a garden to be tended, a story to be rewritten. The battlefield within is where the broken pieces of your past meet the unbreakable spirit of your future, and where you decide which one will claim victory. Chapter 5. Allies and Adversaries. Building a Tribe and Navigating Toxic Relationships. The journey from brokenness to unbreakability is not a solitary path. It is a pilgrimage walked alongside others, a dance of light and shadow where the people we invite into our lives become either wind beneath our wings or anchors dragging us into depths we've fought desperately to escape. This chapter is not about romanticizing relationships or demonizing those who hurt us. It is a clear-eyed exploration of the human ecosystem, a guide to discerning who deserves a seat at your table and who must be shown the door. To build a tribe is to curate a sanctuary of souls who reflect your highest self back to you, who challenge your excuses and celebrate your courage, who understand that growth is not a competition, but a collective rising. Yet, to pretend this process is easy would be a lie. For every ally who sharpens your spirit, there exists an adversary, sometimes disguised as a friend, a lover, or even family, who dulls your edge, who feeds on your energy like a shadow feeds on light. The warrior's task is to master the art of discernment, to wield boundaries like a scalpel, cutting away toxicity without losing compassion, and to cultivate relationships rooted not in convenience or fear, but in the unshakable soil of mutual growth. Let us begin with the foundational truth. Humans are not meant to heal in isolation. The myth of the self-made warrior is just that, a myth. Even the most resilient among us are products of invisible armies, mentors who saw our potential before we did, friends who held space for our rage and grief, strangers whose kindness reminded us that goodness still exists. Neuroscience confirms this. Studies from UCLA reveal that social connection regulates our nervous systems, lowering cortisol, the stress hormone, and boosting oxytocin, the bonding chemical. When we surround ourselves with allies, our brains literally rewire toward resilience. But not all connections are created equal. An ally is not merely someone who laughs at your jokes or nods at your dreams. An ally is someone who loves you too much to let you stay small, who speaks hard truths with softness, who recognizes that your growth is intertwined with their own. Think of the Japanese concept of kizuna, the bonds that tie us through shared struggle. Your tribe should be a mirror reflecting not only who you are, but who you're becoming, a chorus of voices drowning out the whispers of your inner critic. Finding such allies requires intentionality, a willingness to step out of the shallow end of transactional relationships and dive into the deep waters of vulnerability. Start by identifying mentors, not just those with impressive titles, but those whose lives embody the values you aspire to. A mentor might be a therapist teaching you to reframe trauma, a co-worker who models boundary setting without apology, or a historical figure whose writings become your compass. The key is to seek those who've walked the path ahead of you, whose scars map the terrain you're navigating. But mentorship is not passive. It demands humility, the courage to say, "I don't know," and the diligence to apply what you learn. Consider the ancient warrior apprenticeships, where students spent years observing, practicing, and failing under the gaze of a master. Your mentors won't always be gentle. The best will disrupt your comfort, for growth lives in the fertile soil of discomfort. Yet, even as you gather allies, you must sharpen your senses to recognize those who undermine your journey, the emotional vampires. These are not cartoonish villains twirling mustaches. They are often people you love, people cloaked in good intentions, people unaware of their own toxicity. Emotional vampires drain you through subtle means, the friend who hijacks every conversation to vent about their drama, but disappears when you need support. The parent who weaponizes guilt to keep you dependent. The partner who diminishes your ambitions with backhanded compliments. Their currency is manipulation. Their weapon is doubt, and their toll is your energy. Psychology identifies these dynamics as toxic reciprocity, relationships where the balance of give and take is skewed, leaving one person perpetually depleted. To disengage is not cruelty. It is an act of self-preservation. The first step in navigating these relationships is conducting an audit of your inner circle. Set aside an hour of brutal honesty. Write down the names of everyone you interact with regularly. Next to each, note, after spending time with this person, do I feel energized or exhausted? Do they celebrate my wins or covertly resent them? Do they respect my boundaries or push against them? Do they take accountability or perpetually play the victim? This exercise is not about judgment, but clarity. You'll likely find people fall into three categories: radiators, who emit warmth and light, drainers, who suck energy, and neutrals, who leave no lasting impact. Your mission is to invest in radiators, limit exposure to drainers, and reassess neutrals. For those drainers you cannot fully remove, a toxic co-worker, a family member, you must build emotional armor. This begins with boundaries, the warrior's shield. Boundaries are not walls, they are bridges with guardrails. They say, I value myself enough to protect my peace, and I value you enough to be honest. Setting them requires courage, especially if you've been conditioned to equate compliance with kindness. Start small. To the friend who habitually cancels plans last minute, I understand things come up, but when you cancel repeatedly, it makes me feel disrespected. Moving forward, I'll need to step back from making plans unless you commit in advance. To the parent who criticizes your life choices, I appreciate your concern, but my decisions are not up for debate. If you continue to bring this up, I'll have to end the conversation. These scripts are not about changing others. They're about reclaiming your agency. Expect pushback. Toxic people thrive in unregulated spaces. They'll test your resolve with guilt trips. You're so selfish. Gaslighting. You're overreacting. Or silent treatments. Stand firm. Boundaries are a language, and fluency comes with practice. As you curate your tribe, let the warrior's code be your compass: loyalty, honesty, and mutual growth. Loyalty is not blind allegiance. It is standing by your people when their flaws are laid bare, while still holding them accountable. Honesty is not brutality. It is the willingness to say that story you're telling yourself. It's keeping you stuck, even when silence would be easier. Mutual growth is the heartbeat of the code. Relationships where both parties are committed to expanding, even when it means outgrowing old versions of themselves. Consider the Norse warriors of old, who pledged oaths not just to fight alongside each other, but to die as better men than they lived. Your tribe should inspire that same reverence for evolution. But what of those you must leave behind? Grieve them. Even toxic relationships often hold fragments of love, history, or shared dreams. Honor the lessons they taught you. Then release them with the dignity you'd grant a fallen comrade. This is not failure. It is wisdom. Nature offers a metaphor here. Forests grow stronger when diseased trees are removed, allowing sunlight to nourish the healthy. Your spirit is no different. In the end, building a tribe is an act of rebellion in a world that profits from our isolation. It is saying, I will not heal alone. It is recognizing that warriors are not forged in vacuums, but in the friction and grace of human connection. As you move forward, carry this truth. Your allies are not just people. They are lifelines, mirrors, and living proof that unbreakability is a chorus, not a solo. The importance of community. The science of communal resilience stretches back to our earliest ancestors, who survived predators and famines not through individual brilliance, but collective ingenuity. Modern research echoes this. A Harvard study tracking adult development for 85 years found that strong relationships were the single greatest predictor of happiness and longevity, outranking wealth, fame, or even genetics. Yet community, in the warrior's context, is not about quantity, but quality. It's the difference between having 500 social media followers and 3 friends who'd drive across states to help you move. To find your tribe, you must first become a tribe member. This means showing up, not just in crises, but in mundane moments. Send the text, "I saw this and thought of you." Listen without rushing to fix. Remember birthdays. Celebrate quirks. Community is built not in grand gestures, but in accumulated acts of care. The Warrior's Code. Loyalty in the Warrior's Code is not sycophancy. It is the courage to say, "I disagree with your choice, but I'll stand by you as you learn from it." Honesty is radical transparency, even when it risks conflict. Mutual growth means rejecting the scarcity mindset. Believing another's success diminishes yours. Instead, adopt the mentality of rising tides. As you elevate, so do your allies. This code thrives in accountability. When you err, and you will, apologize without caveats. When conflicts arise, address them swiftly, guided by the question, "Is this issue more important than the relationship?" Often, the answer is no. Action steps, deep dive. Auditing your inner circle is an emotional excavation. Begin by listing your top 10 frequent contacts. For each, ask, "Do they respect my time?" E.g., punctuality, not overstepping boundaries. "Do they respect my values?" P.E.G., not mocking your goals. "Do they reciprocate effort?" E.g., initiating contact, showing interest in your life. "Do they inspire or drain me?" Physically note energy levels post-interaction. For those draining you, decide, remove, limit, or reframe. Removing might mean a direct conversation. "I need space to focus on my growth." Limiting could involve reducing contact from weekly calls to monthly. Reframing is changing your response. Instead of venting with a gossipy friend, steer conversations to neutral topics. Scripts for boundaries must balance firmness and kindness. Examples: to a chronic complainer, "I care about you, but constantly discussing problems without seeking solutions is draining. Can we focus on actionable steps?" To a boundary pusher, "When you action, I feel emotion. Moving forward, I need specific change." To a guilt tripper, "I understand you're upset, but I won't make decisions based on guilt." Practice these scripts aloud. Record yourself. Notice where your voice wavers. Those are the areas needing inner work. The path to unbreakability is paved with the relationships you nurture and the ones you release. Your tribe is your fortress, your sanctuary, and your launchpad. Choose them wisely, guard them fiercely, and never forget. The greatest warriors are those who fight not just for themselves, but for the souls marching beside them. Chapter 6. The Unbreakable Legacy. From warrior to mentor, leading others through your story. The journey from brokenness to unbreakability is not a solitary conquest. It is a bridge built from the ashes of your struggles, meant to carry others toward their own liberation. When you reach the stage where your scars have hardened into armor and your pain has crystallized into wisdom, the greatest test of your transformation begins. The test of legacy. A warrior's true strength is not measured by the battles they win for themselves, but by the battles they inspire others to fight. This chapter is not about resting on your laurels. It is about redefining what it means to live a life of purpose, ensuring that your hard-won growth becomes a torch for those still stumbling in the dark. Complacency is the silent assassin of transformation. The moment you believe you've arrived is the moment your growth stagnates, your edges soften, and the fire that forged you begins to dim. History is littered with stories of individuals who climbed mountains only to lose themselves in the valleys of their own pride. Sustaining growth requires a commitment to perpetual evolution, a recognition that the warrior's path is not a destination, but a continuum. Imagine a tree that stops stretching its roots deeper into the soil. It may stand tall for a season, but the first storm will expose its fragility. Similarly, your resilience depends on continuously nurturing your mind, body, and spirit, even when the world applauds your progress. To avoid complacency, you must cultivate what the Japanese call Kaizen, the philosophy of continuous improvement. This means setting uncomfortable goals that stretch your capabilities, seeking feedback from those who challenge your blind spots, and embracing the humility to admit that mastery is a myth. The unbreakable warrior does not fear plateaus. They see them as invitations to pivot, innovate, and rediscover their hunger. Your story, once a source of shame, is now your most potent weapon, not because it is unique, but because it is human. To inspire others, you need not position yourself as a savior or a saint. In fact, the savior complex is a trap that dilutes the authenticity of your message. People do not need heroes on pedestals. They need guides who kneel in the dirt beside them, whose hands still bear the calluses of their own battles. Sharing your journey is not about packaging pain into palatable lessons. It is about radiating the raw, unvarnished truth of your experience so others feel permission to confront their own. Consider the difference between a lighthouse and a spotlight. One humbly stands as a beacon for those lost at sea, while the other demands attention for its own brilliance. When you share your story, focus not on how far you've come, but on how others might see their own reflections in your struggles. This requires vulnerability without victimhood, confidence without arrogance, and a willingness to listen as much as you speak. The ripple effect of unbreakable warriors isn't born from grand gestures, but from the cumulative power of small, intentional acts. Every time you choose courage over comfort, every time you replace judgment with empathy, every time you turn your scars into sermons, you send waves of change into the world. These ripples may seem insignificant at first, but over time they reshape cultures, dismantle toxic norms, and ignite movements. Consider the civil rights activists whose quiet defiance inspired millions, or the everyday parents who break cycles of abuse to gift their children a healthier legacy. Your influence does not require a platform. It requires presence. It thrives in the way you show up for a friend in crisis, the boundaries you set to honor your worth, or the courage you muster to speak your truth in a room that demands silence. The unbreakable warrior understands that changing the world begins with changing the microcosms of their own lives, their families, workplaces, and communities. To cement your legacy, start by drafting a legacy letter, a heartfelt missive to your future self or loved ones that articulates the values, lessons, and hopes you wish to leave behind. This is not a will of material possessions, but a testament to the intangible riches of your journey, the resilience you cultivated, the love you refused to withhold, and the mistakes you transformed into wisdom. Write with radical honesty, as if these words might one day be the compass that guides someone through their darkest night. Describe the moments that nearly broke you and how you rebuilt yourself. Confess the fears you still carry and the dreams you dare not speak aloud. A legacy letter is not about perfection. It is about truth. It is a contract with your future self, a promise to live in alignment with the principles you cherish most. Revisit this letter annually, not as a static document, but as a living record of your evolution. Next, launch a personal project designed to share your wisdom in a way that feels authentic to your voice. If you are a writer, start a blog that dissects the myths of resilience. If you thrive in community, host workshops that teach others how to forge their own armor. If you are a quiet observer, mentor one person privately, offering the guidance you once longed for. The format matters less than the intention, to create something that outlives your momentary motivation. Many abandon legacy projects because they conflate scale with impact, forgetting that a single conversation can alter the trajectory of a life. Do not wait for permission, credentials, or a grand vision. Begin where you are with what you have. Document your process publicly, not to seek validation, but to normalize the stumbles and restarts inherent to any meaningful endeavor. Your project may evolve over time, and that is a sign of growth, not failure. As you step into the role of mentor, remember that leadership is not about having all the answers. It is about asking the right questions. When someone shares their pain with you, resist the urge to fix, rescue, or advise. Instead, hold space for their autonomy by asking, "What do you believe you need to heal?" Or, "How can I support you in owning your power?" This approach transforms dynamics of dependency into partnerships of mutual growth. The unbreakable warrior knows that their greatest gift to others is not a road map, but a mirror, a reflection of the strength those individuals already possess, but have not yet learned to trust. Legacy is also about stewardship, protecting the wisdom passed down to you while leaving room for future generations to innovate. Honor the mentors, ancestors, and traditions that shaped you, but do not fossilize their teachings into dogma. Progress demands that we build upon the past, not replicate it. Share stories of your lineage, but pair them with questions like, "How might we reimagine this lesson for today's challenges?" True legacy is not a museum of relics. It is a living, breathing dialogue between the past and the future. Finally, recognize that your ripple effect will often be invisible to you. Seeds you plant today may take decades to bloom. A passing comment you forget might linger in someone's mind for years, germinating into courage when they need it most. Trust that your work matters, even when you cannot trace its trajectory. The unbreakable warrior plants trees whose shade they will never sit under, fights battles whose victories will be claimed by others, and loves fiercely without demanding reciprocity. The warrior's path does not end with a triumphant climax. It unfolds as a lifelong pilgrimage, marked by cycles of struggle, growth, and renewal. As you close this chapter of your journey, take this oath, not as a hollow promise, but as a sacred vow to the self you are becoming and the world you are shaping. I vow to honor resilience not as a trophy of my past, but as a practice of my present. I will greet each challenge as a teacher, each failure as a refiner's fire, and each moment of doubt as a summons to dig deeper. I will not romanticize struggle, nor will I shrink from it. When fatigue threatens to silence my resolve, I will remember the battles I have already won, and I will rise. I vow to wield compassion as my sharpest blade, to cut through judgment, both toward others and myself. I will forgive the parts of me that still tremble, that still hesitate, that still ache with old wounds. I will extend this grace to those around me, recognizing that every soul fights silent wars I cannot see. My strength will never be a weapon to diminish. It will be a shelter to uplift. I vow to pursue growth with the humility of a perpetual student. I will seek wisdom in unexpected places, in the laughter of children, the silence of forests, and the stories of those society ignores. I will question my assumptions, surrender my need for certainty, and embrace the discomfort of unlearning. My mind will remain open, even when my convictions run deep. I vow to leave no one behind in my pursuit of progress. I will use my voice to amplify the silenced, my resources to empower the marginalized, and my privilege to dismantle the systems that fracture human potential. My legacy will be measured not by accolades, but by the doors I hold open for others. I vow to tend to my spirit with the same ferocity I bring to the world. I will honor my body as a temple, my rest as an act of resistance, and my joy as a revolutionary force. I will not sacrifice my humanity on the altar of productivity, for I am a being, not a machine. Finally, I vow to return to this oath when I lose my way, to let it anchor me in storms and humble me in calm. I am a warrior, not a god. I will falter, but I will not abandon the path. My brokenness is not my end. My unbreakability is not my finale. I am a story still being written, a flame still being forged, a legacy still being born.